Hey folks, welcome to this week's edition of Drive the Bid Podcast, powered by ClassicCars.com and Auto Hunter. I am Diego Rosenberg, and this right here is Derek Shakey.
Hello.
Nice shirt you got there today.
Oh yeah.
So shall we begin?
Yes.
Okay. Pow.
All right. So I realized I've been bringing a lot of Bentley news lately over the past several weeks, but I don't know. It seems like they always have something interesting. And as I said before, you know, they're very much invested in being a lifestyle brand as opposed to just a pure vehicle manufacturer. So one of the latest initiatives along those lines is they've partnered with a facility called the Preserve Sporting Club and Residences in Rhode Island, of all places. I figured, you know, it'd be California or Wyoming or something like that, but this is in Rhode Island. It's a 3,500 acre facility, and there they're going to offer a variety of different Bentley off-road driving experiences. And there's three to be exact, and they're each one is focused on a different activity. So as you can see there, one of them is focused on fly fishing, and they have these specially outfitted Bentayga V8 models with the all-terrain specification, and then, of course, the Bentley Dynamic Ride, which is a 48-volt anti-roll system, so you keep it everything nice and planted. So, yeah, they have the fly fishing setup, and then they have one for field sports, so I'm guessing that's stuff like you know, lacrosse or maybe, I don't know, field hockey, things like that. And then they also have one designed specifically for upscale picnicking. And there's, it might be in the deck, there's one picture where they show, you know, like champagne and flute, like champagne flutes and things like that. And of course, as part of the experience, there's also off-roading. So it's kind of, it's like what Land Rover does with the Land Rover Experience, but this is a little more targeted in terms of lifestyle outside of that.
Is this considered off-roading for Bentley?
Yeah, I'd say.
Okay. What is the name of the model again?
Bentayga.
Yes, which is what?
So that is derived from a massive rock formation in the Canary Islands.
Hmm.
So, but they spell it R-O-Q-U-E. So I guess rock or I guess rock or roque Bentayga.
It rolls off the tongue, sounds like.
But yeah, this pretty neat. It's a logical extension of the model, you know, and it kind of brings everything together, you know, upscale lifestyle, but it also really stresses the fact that, oh, well, we've built this to off-road. And between excursions and different experiences, attendees will be escorted around in a Bentayga long wheelbase. So it's Bentayga from start to finish. And a perk for Bentley owners is they get access to the facility twice yearly, and then they get a special booking at the golf course, the spa, and the equestrian center.
Hmm. Must be nice.
Must be.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, we would be glad to review the experience for the ClassicCars.com journal if the people at Bentley are interested.
If I did that, I'd have to practice saying the model before I went and did it.
You know, I think I believe in you. I think you can get it down. Mm.
I don't know.
Now, how are you with sipping champagne? Can you get your pinky up?
It's no, because when I down it, my pinky's down.
Oh, okay.
So my news is the 2025 Mini Countryman John Cooper Works special. So this, okay, number one, it's disappointing there are no sticks, at least for these anymore. So there are two countrymen, or countrymans, whichever. there is a regular normally aspirated one. I think it's 241 horsepower. And then there's an electric one that's 308. Then there's this. This has 312 horsepower.
And it's a four-cylinder?
Yes, turbo four, 2-liter four.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty stout.
Yeah. 0.26 coefficient drag, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting for what's basically a wagon. Mm-hmm. They claim 0 to 60 in 5.4 seconds, but Car and Driver says that they got 4.4 with their last generation one.
Oh, okay. So they're being very conservative.
I mean, let's presume.
So I assume, sorry, I'm probably jumping the gun here, but I'm assuming, you know, the thrust of this is, since it's a JCW build, is going fast. But since it's a Countryman, I'm curious if they've done anything as far as, you know, off-roading or soft-roading enhancements.
I'm guessing not. But I don't know. I mean, let's say I just got the vital stats from the article in Car and Driver, and here I am presenting it to everyone USA. So, but you can see some of the John Cooper Works tweaks, like let's say these wheels and the front fascia.
And the red accents. Wow, this interior. Yeah, the interior is very, I mean, you know, minis have always been more stylish and design heavy
sure,
vehicles, but the interior on this has got a lot going on.
So is it worth $47,000 base?
Good question. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
That's an interesting, real interesting dashboard.
I mean, to me, it looks like a Mini Cooper dashboard, but it has these elements, whether it's design or at lighting. I don't know. It reminds me of a stereo, like a graphic equalizer in some
yeah.
way.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. You know, at first I was tempted to say, oh, it's LED lighting, but I guess it looks like fabric, you know, when you look at it
yeah.
a little more closely.
And maybe it's fabric with lights peeking from underneath. I don't know. I'm guessing these are graphics, like colors versus lights. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a lot less a lot less to worry about.
I do notice that the climate control system is a lot more simplified from previous ones.
Yeah, that's pretty efficient looking. And then, yeah, of course, the giant centrally mounted tach and, well, gauge cluster in general.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then, yeah, they get those real meaty bumps up there. Keep your thumbs in place.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I report this with a little bit of bittersweetness just because it seems Mini has seemed to have lost their way through, I don't know, technology, the way the market's moved in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, yeah, that's a more of a, I guess, a soft road, or the Countryman in general, because every brand has come out with some vehicle along those lines.
I don't mean it from that, but Mini, when it came out, was kind of like this sporty car with a lot of nice marketing behind it, and now it's like they have no more sticks. Now they seem to be becoming more electric.
Yeah, well, yeah, like you said, yeah, the market, everything seems to be going that way.
So, anywho, Steve Mignante, no update still. So I'm going to say that he is stable and continuing to improve. Let's hope for the best.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, you know, these things, it seems like right now it seems like it takes forever, but, you know, hopefully he recovers and then it'll just, you know, seem like, oh, it was that long ago?
Mm-hmm. I think right now it's been maybe 6 weeks since there's has been an update. So we'll see. So next, now we're done with the news, we have an automotive puzzle created by you.
Yes, yeah.
So here are four cars. One of them is a McLaren. This is the one that came out in the 90s?
Yes, okay. Yeah, the F1.
So, which some people claim to be the first hypercar, if I'm correct. That's arguable. Then we have a Viper. Is this the second generation Viper? Or
The second generation, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think the years line up for that.
So then, continuing clockwise, we have a Ferrari 2+2, 330 GTC, maybe?
Something like that, but yeah, it's a 330.
I can't keep that stuff straight, but... And then we have a Maserati Ghibli.
Yes.
So there's a connection among all of them.
Yes, you started this, Diego, so I...
Okay. I do not know. I can't figure it out. I mean, is it something with a certain designer?
No. But there's this... Well, let me vague this up. There is a certain something that connects all of these, obviously. Not a designer, but let's just say a company.
Four wheels? Oh, company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, McLaren... Cars and Concepts, one of those Detroit things. I don't know. I mean, like with the Italians, I have no idea. So let's proceed and you can spill the beans. This is the McLaren seat.
Yep, centrally mounted.
Here's the Viper.
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm guessing, is the Maserati.
Yes. Yeah, very interesting color. And this one actually is available on classiccars.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I need to look this up. This looks like an interesting color. And here's the Ferrari, which has a very nice dashboard. Gauges up the wazoo.
Love that steering wheel.
It looks very comfortable. I'm just not into the, let's say, that type of Ferrari, the 2 plus 2. But, you know, let's say a cheap way to get a V12. What is the connection?
The connection is they all came with or were available with Connolly leather interiors.
Okay. So the British twist to three out of the four are not Brits.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really interesting company. They were started in 1878 and they initially started by offering shoe repairs. And then they went on to bridle leather. And then before the automobile, they were furnishing, you know, the bench seats for carriages. And then, of course, they moved into the automotive space. And over the years, they've had a very long and illustrious list of clients. So among other companies they've worked with, they furnished the seating materials for the Concorde. The QE2, Queen Elizabeth II, it started as a cruise liner, and then it became a floating hotel docked in Dubai. And then they've had a relationship with Ferrari since 1947. And among other automakers, they've worked with Aston Martin, Rolls-Royce, Ferrari. I mean, just a long list. And last I heard, they had a catalog of over 4,000 different colors. And what was really interesting was... I watched a recent video where one of the descendants of one of the founders was talking about working with Gordon Murray on the McLaren F1. And he was told, you know, as soon as you start talking with Gordon Murray about interior materials, he's going to want you to weigh it. So, of course, that came up, you know, first question out of his mouth, how much does it weigh? So, you know, he told them whatever the weight was. And, you know, typically their leather is about 1.2 millimeters thick. The older leathers are a little thicker. But, of course, Gordon Murray wanted to get the weight down for the McLaren F1. So Connolly Leather told him, okay, well, you know, we'll get the weight down. And they did that just by using a thinner leather. It was less than a millimeter thick. Now, of course, they had their own weight saving measures. I mean, they had a carbon fiber chassis, took over 3,000 hours to make. And then the wheels were magnesium, and then the toolkit was titanium. So, yeah, it just shows you how focused a vehicle that was, the fact that they, you know, even down to the leather thickness.
Mm-hmm. I would not have guessed that these are all connected by interior materials.
Yeah. And, you know, the Viper, I don't think came standard with it, but it was an option, at least on certain model years. The one that I honed in on was the 99, and it had, yeah, that nice kind of caramel tan color to it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, all united by that.
Very cool. So... my feature for today is going to be cars of my parents' homeland. So, as you know, my parents are originally from Argentina. They came here in 1964.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm going to show you some cars that were sold in Argentina that were based on American cars. So the first one, the most famous, is the Ford Falcon. So other than the watermark, this is a 1962 Ford Falcon, which looks exactly like the American Ford Falcon.
It's a looker.
So here's another one. I'm going to, without knowing the complete lineage of these cars, this is all a guess. It's a little bit difficult to find documentation on these cars, but I believe this is how they facelifted it. The grill, this grill never appeared in the United States. But otherwise, it looks like a Ford Falcon.
It's a good looking car.
And then they had some with four headlights.
Not so much on that one.
So this one's a 1970. You can see it's the same body from R60 to 63. They continued into the early 90s.
Wow.
And okay. I'm going to show you that. So this is a 70. This one is early to mid 70s. This one's called a Sprint. You can see the performance looking stripe. Still had a six cylinder. Something happened here. Give me one sec. I pressed a button. Okay, there we go. That's what it looks like from the front. It's a little pixelated in this picture. You can see they have these square headlights, quads. I believe also that aside of the Sprint, the fancier versions, let's call it the Deluxe, I'm not sure if that's the case, had four headlights, and the lesser ones have two, like this. And I'm guessing because of the parking lights are shared. So then they updated them with the European style headlights, I think in the late 80s.
Okay, yeah, that looks about right, in the 80s somewhere.
I'm sorry, late 70s.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And that's what the tail looked like then, the taillights.
Mm-hmm.
But sometime in the 80s, they updated it to look like this. Now, all this kind of stuff looks like American Ford stuff in many ways. You know, like what Ford was doing in the U.S. Look at the font for the trunk lid, Falcon 3.0.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the Falcon badge. Yeah, the lettering looks like something you'd find over here.
But, you know, even the taillights or something, I mean, it all feels like Ford. You go inside one of these, it feels like a 80s Ford,
mm-hmm.
even though it's a 1960 body.
Wow.
So...
they got their money's worth out of it.
Yeah, for sure. Except it's like 3-speed in the column standard. They had a 4-speed on the floor, and I don't know if even they had an automatic. I mean, to see one of these as a wagon with a 4-speed, it was not something unusual to find in Argentina. But
yeah.
It's, you know, it's just a 6-cylinder with no power for the most part. So Ford of Argentina also had this. This is a Fairlane 500. They had a Fairlane 500, and an LTD. They produced them, I think, from the late 60s to maybe 1981, 82, maybe 83. I can't really remember. The VH they had a 292 for one of them, which is a Y block. Actually, I think all the V8s were Y blocks. Don't quote me on this. They may have updated it a little bit.
So the old Thunderbird motors, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not Thunderbirds, but 50s Fords.
Yeah. Well, I just always associate Y block with Thunderbird.
Yeah. I mean, but
that's just me though.
You look at the full size Fords from the era, and they have the same engines, just plus the addition of a 6. But any V8 from that era is a Y-block. Until 58, that's when they started the FE series, which I guess was 352 back then. So they had a Fairlane 500 and LTD. Now, LTD, just to be clear, is not a full-size car in Argentina. It was just the fanciest of this. So over a Dodge, let's say Chrysler, but Dodge, they had this A-body, which is like a Dart, with different model names. They had a Valiant. They had a Polara. They had a GTX, like this one. Yes, a Dodge GTX, not Plymouth. they had a Coronado, which is a four-door, and they also had a Coronado GT. I think those came with automatics. Don't quote me. Anyway, they have two variations of this as far as styling. This one is the earlier one. This came out in 69, I think. And you can see they have these driving lights here in the grill. This is what the taillights look like.
Interesting.
So it's like it looks a little bit like Mopars from the era, but it does. It looks more like a satellite or a coronet versus a dart.
Hmm.
So the facelift, which I think came out in 73, I'm not sure, looks like this. Here's something from a brochure. This is a Dodge GTX. Six cylinders or 318s are the only engines. So nothing fast. It looks fast. Maybe for there it's fast, but nothing great for our standards. You can see electronic ignition here. So this is a Coronado. This is the four-door version. You can see the taillights. Remember the previous one kind of had these waterfall taillights? These are just kind of like, I don't know, something with a bisection.
Yeah, they seem to fit the body lines better.
Yeah. This one is a Polara, so it's less fancy than the GTX. These are also a lot rarer. I would say, based on my visits to Buenos Aires. So next, we're going to General Motors. So they made the Chevy 2 in Argentina. These look a little bit different from the ones we have in the U.S. This one's just a regular one. It may be called Chevy. Oh, for one thing, they called these a Chevy 400. It wasn't called Chevy 2. So this is a regular one. It may be a 400 Super, for all I know. That's one of the lower line versions. This one is a Rally Sport. You can see it has the hood scoops. This one has a stripe. They're all four doors. And this one's got a 256 or 250 six cylinder, to be clear. This is the fancier ones. I don't really remember. One of them is a Super Sport. The other one, I don't remember the trim level. You can see this one. My friend owns this. Some guy I met in Argentina. My communications researching all this stuff. This is his grandfather's originally. Mm-hmm. And that one is a Super Sport. You can tell by the hood scoops.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And you can see they have the quad headlights, which were never available in the U.S.
Hmm.
So when they came out with this in 68, they produced these in Argentina concurrently with these for a little bit. So this one is called the Chevrolet Chevy.
Well, I guess it's not too far from Chevy too.
Right. So this is the Chevrolet Chevy Super Sport. Has a six cylinder. It's got the Super Sport hood, as you can see here. But otherwise, and rally wheels, no less.
Nice.
But it's just a six-cylinder Nova, for all intents and purposes. Now, the Super Sport had a fancier version called the Serie 2. Let's say Serie 2. How about that? So there's no S at the end of series, but you can see here it says Serie 2.
Hmm.
So this one, the first generation... Let's say the first generation stripe that they had was this one around the C-pillar going across. Let's say like a lot of other stripes in the era in America. I could think of like GTO Judge, Hurst Olds, maybe even some 70s Roadrunners. So this is the first generation striped one. This one's the second one, which I'll call a surfboard.
Yeah, I get that.
You can see also here the parking lights migrated to the side, which we never got in the U.S. Oh, also, the Oldsmobile wheels. This is the third paint scheme. I'm going to guess this is 76 by now.
That's cool looking.
And here's the last one. They call this the Opus. Actually, this is a preview. I'm giving you the ad. So you can see this is the last, the Opus, that they got it from the ad. Presumably. This is the Serie 2. This one's a Malibu. They had a fancy four-door called the Chevy Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the Chevy Super, which is the low-line version. So this is a Serie 2, has the driving lights in the grill, and of course, the lower body striping kind of reminds me of a 70s 442, maybe 1977 or so. Oldsmobile wheels, of course. And maybe for some other time we can talk about this. This is the Torino. It was built by Kaiser Industry Argentina.
Okay.
I mean, Kaiser Industries in English, let's say. This is a Rambler American modified with a six-cylinder from Kaiser. I think they called that the Typhoon. And styling that was revised by Pininfarina.
That's a good-looking car.
It is. And you can tell maybe the Rambler origins from this crease on the rear fender. But this is for another topic, another conversation, because open a can's worm. So this fits in the vein of everything else I've talked about, but really these other ones are a little bit more interesting to me just because they look homegrown from the United States, but they're not.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, some of them, you know, especially with the Oldsmobiles, they, the wheels, they combine different components. I've never been to Argentina, but, one of my neighbors growing up, Mr. Holland, had an Opus.
Is that a Bloom County joke or something?
It's just a movie title.
Okay. Gotcha. I was thinking, okay, Holland. Yeah, there's plenty of Europeans in Argentina, so that name works. But no, I got it. Yeah. Can I slap my knee now? Okay. As we go on, we are going to present to our viewing audience, listening audience, some cars on AutoHunter. And here's one that you picked.
Yes. So this is a replica of a 1955 Porsche 356 Speedster. It's from this company called JPS Motorsport. JPS Motorsports. I wanted to get that exactly right. This one up for sale on AutoHunter. The auction ends on Thursday, November 16th. So this is what you could call an exploding offer. And it's got the classic looks. This just looks like a fantastic like date night car. I mean, just sitting in that would be romantic, but especially with a backdrop like that. The mechanicals, it has a fuel-injected and a water-cooled Subaru 2.5-liter flat four-cylinder. If you go to JPS Motorsports on their website, they have different engine options. This displacement was not on there, but according to the seller, this is a custom-made engine for this car. 230 horsepower, that's paired with a Rancho four-speed manual, and that's got a new clutch as well.
It's not a turbo Subaru engine?
No. As far as I saw, it's just a 2.5 liter.
It seems somewhat of a shame that it's saddled with a 4-speed, though. I'll tell you what, though. This interior color is gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, when you go to JPS Motorsports, they have a variety of different interior colors. You know, you can customize a lot of things. In this car, it's, maroon colored leatherette, and then also on the door panels. And that exterior color is a Porsche shade of silver metallic, code 936. Just a great looking package.
Very cool. And when does the auction expire?
That is Thursday, November 16th.
Very good. So, folks, you got a bid on that soon, because today, right now, is the 13th.
Yes.
And when this goes live, they'll have to be bidding really quickly. So be on the ball, folks. Mine is a 1966 Shelby GT350. This one's called a carryover car. And if my understanding is that when the 65s were done, the plants were converting to the 66s, but Shelby wanted to be building something. So they ordered a bunch of, I think it's 252. They ordered 252 Mustang Fastbacks with the K code 289. and built them. So there are a lot of the things on these cars are transitional between 65 and 66. For example, the plexiglass rear window on the side, that is a 66 feature. The side scoops in front of the rear wheel is a 66 feature. But this looks like a 65 in so many other ways. There, it has a little bit of both.
It's like a tweener model.
Exactly. So it's a 66, but I think 66s sometimes have baggage because there's a lot of Hurst cars and a lot of them are automatics and they have the rear seat, so they're considered not as sporting. But this one doesn't suffer from that. So there's a lot of things that are a little bit different between the 65s, between this and the 65s and the 66s. I really, really dig these side mirrors. You can see here there's no rear seat like the 65s would have. So I think this is a very special car. This currently is on Auto Hunter. It expires on November 20th, which I believe is a Monday. This is probably going to be a pricey car. I mean, 65s are out of this world. 66s are expensive, but a little bit more attainable. This one, I think, has the best of both worlds. I really like this, and I'm not into Shelby. Well, let me take that back. In the past 10 years, I've started to appreciate the 65 Shelbys. They're kind of special. And this one kind of has some really neat styling stuff. And I've always liked these types of mags, too. You see a lot of these, like the wheel covers on some cars. You could get them in Chevys and Dodges that have this look. But a lot of people don't like them because they're wheel covers and not wheels. These are the actual mags. I love this style. I think this is really cool.
Yeah, great looking car.
Yeah.
Great looking car. And yeah, plenty of time to bid on it, so that's good.
So your other Auto Hunter pick this week?
Yeah, well, you know, old school looks, not as old school as the Shelby, but this is a 1987 Chevrolet K5 Blazer. And this has got a lot of new goodies on it. As you can tell, it's got LED headlights. It's got aftermarket wheels, the tube steps on the side. In particular, this has $18,000 in upgrades put on within the past 11 years. So I think in 2012, it had the transmission and the torque converter rebuilt. It's had some paint touch-ups done. It's received a 2.5-inch lift kit. The exhaust system was replaced. And as far as just the basic features, you know, it's got AC, power windows, locks, front disc brakes. So it's got a lot of creature comforts. And then as far as the updates, so it's got a 350 with fuel injection. And over the past several years, you know, a lot of things have been replaced. So, you know, the spark plugs, the distributor, fuel injectors, that's a big one, throttle position sensor, throttle cable. And then it's had a variety of like adjustments and updates done. So the gear shift indicator has been adjusted, the brakes, engine timing adjustment, and also a throttle kickdown adjustment were performed. So a lot of new parts, a lot of tweaks and updates to it. And then there was even touch-up work done to that tan midsection because it was like cracking. So that's even been updated and touched up.
Even though I'm not into trucks, one thing I always thought was cool about these, the dashboard, all those gauges.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely an appealing part of these. And yeah, it's just that old school look, two-box design, rugged four-wheel drive V8. I mean, it is one of those quintessential, relatively modern classic American SUVs. And yeah, with all the new parts, I mean, this is the best of both worlds.
Very nice. So my next pick for Auto Hunter is this 1993 Isuzu. It's called the Elf 150.
It's F-150?
Elf.
Oh.
Good call, though. Good call. So I don't know if they ever had these in America, because a lot of these look like stuff that they'd have in airports or something like that, you know, just like those airport vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Good point. I didn't think about that.
That being said, it's right-hand drive, so I have no idea. To me, why would you import a right-hand drive truck that you could get in the U.S.? So I'm guessing this is kind of unique. It's one of these types of trucks that have these collapsible sides, whatever it's called. 3.1 liter diesel four cylinder. That's what powers it. It has under 30,000 miles, and the auction ends on Friday, I think. Yes, the 17th of November on Friday. That's when the auction ends. Let's say for 30,000 miles, it looks well worn. But, you know, it's any buyer should do his or her due diligence to make sure that everything's cool. And presumably everything is cool. It's just, you know, it's a truck. It's going to have scars.
Yeah, it's a work vehicle.
Yeah.
Definitely not a lifestyle
vehicle. But, you know, it's like if you're an enthusiast and you need a work vehicle, why not have the best of both worlds?
Yeah, and this is one of those vehicles I can see like a business buying and maybe you know, refurbishing and then putting, you know, custom graphics on it and everything, because like every now and then you'll be out like at like a farmer's market or some, you know, out in public, and you'll see like a I saw one recently. It was along the lines of these. I think it was like might have been a JDM vehicle, but it was like one of those little sort of mini work trucks. And some, you know, boutique business had it, and they put their logo on it and everything. And, you know, it stands out. They're easier to maneuver. I'm guessing good on gas. And, you know, it can get people's attention, especially, you know, if it's right-hand drive. So maybe this, it's second life. It'll function as a company vehicle of some sort.
For sure. I mean, for sure, it's pretty cool. You can see the inline four right here.
Oh, yeah.
So, plus, you know, one of the reasons why I chose this is because I have this fascination. I've never driven a forward control truck.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is an Auto Hunter. It ends on the 17th.
So, what you're saying, Diego, is you're going to bid on this?
No. I had to buy new tires for the Catalina, so no.
Oh, yes, yeah. We'll have to get into that in some other episode.
Yes, for sure. That being said, that is the end of this week's Drive the Bid. Folks, be sure to press like on YouTube so you can be kept abreast for all future and past Auto Hunter Drive the Bid podcasts. Thank you very much for your selections and help, Derek. And for you folks out in TV land, have a very good week. Thank you.
Thank you.